end of the unwritten.
I'm going to shoot my pants.
When you get to this section of it, like the end of volume one, it's so good. It's unreal. You were right before the wound. You just finished the
volume
War
five.
Of the Words. Yeah, the War of the Words.
Was that volume five or volume six? Because I read War of the Words, I don't have the trade though.
Yeah, that would be volume six. I read the first trade.
There is issues.
Yeah, and then there's
the first
the
trade
wound.
Is good, but it's not until like volume two and three, and then volume four is Leviathan, right? Because that's like my favorite.
That's
arc.
When it gets really heavy.
The book is so good.
It is so good.
I like the first trade. I like Fables more.
I need to catch up on that too. I was thinking about that the other day.
Fables
like,
is also really
the
good.
Game just came out. Like,
it's so good.
Like,
it looks
really
awesome.
Good.
Yeah. Oh my god, it's awesome.
I also heard that it ends on a cliffhanger, so you're like, fuck!
Yeah, because it's going to be released in five episodes.
The Penny Arcade comic about it this week was pretty funny.
Sorry.
It's okay, I just want to say, did you guys see the Cap 2 trailer? No. Holy fuck, it looks so fucking cool.
I'm going to watch the trailer for me, I'm already going
to
see.
But it looks so
it's not like
amazing.
I need to be convinced that I want to see Captain America 2. Having said that, I'll probably see it on DVD, because by the time it comes out, I'll have a child.
No, you'll want to see it. Just
I'm sure
abandon
I'll want
your
to
child.
See it, Ryan, but
you will
not.
Want to abandon your child for it. It looks like the best Marvel movie yet. It's a cool spy movie.
That's cool. I mean, the sentence coolest Marvel movie ever doesn't do a whole lot for me, because I don't really care one way or the other about the Marvel. I don't dislike them. I think they're actually pretty good. I just don't care.
Fair enough. I saw Thor 2 got, like, okay reviews. Like, they're like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm looking forward. I'll see it eventually. I like the first one.
I'll probably see it opening night, because
I just don't get as excited about them.
Too much.
Just because there's other stuff I want to see.
Still really jazzed about Wolf Among Us.
I'm eating this Pop-Tart.
You should eat it. You should eat it. You should play Wolf Among Us and just get it off Steam. It's like $4. It's like you can play it on your PC.
You said that with such disdain, like,
no,
I'm not playing it.
No, and not because I'm above video games, but because I will spend that $4 and it will forever be lost to me. Having said that, I did buy Plants vs. Zombies 2 today. And by buy, I mean it was free.
Yeah, it's free, so. But it's kind of fun.
But why is it free? I paid like $20 for the first one when it came out.
Really?
Well, I put it on the PC.
Okay.
I bought it like right when it came out, and it was huge and awesome.
It's because they do the whole like micro-purchase thing.
Oh, really?
Like, if you want the chili pepper plant, $3.
Oh, because
Plants
vs. Zombies 1 wasn't like that.
No, Plants vs. Zombies was like, pay a buck, like on my phone anyways, pay a buck, you get everything. And it... I like
that.
That
makes me mad. Damn it.
But mind you, you can play the whole game and beat the whole game without buying anything, so it's
yeah, but it's harder.
Not really.
I suck at video games.
I beat it. It's pretty easy.
When did it come out? I just got an email about it today. A
couple months ago.
Oh, really?
Like 4 months ago, probably.
I just thought it came out today.
Yeah.
Can you...
Oh, you want the lyrics.
Also, can you play Rush?
That's my meal appeared on the coffee table.
And by coffee table,
they
play
that at the beginning of Wolf Among Us. In the first chapter, you get to fight the huntsman who kills him from Red Riding Hood, and you go to the apartment of Mr. Toad, who phones you, and he's like this.
Yeah,
he's this British.
You want a wild ride?
No, he talks like this. So he talks about I can't talk upstairs, and it made me laugh because it was great.
But you don't get to go on a wild ride with him.
I've been on
then
Mr. Toad's wild ride.
Fuck that!
Zombies, werewolves, robot vampires,
running
wait.
After
zombies.
Seriously?
Yeah. Zombies, werewolves, robot vampires running after me. They want my brains, my blood, my body, all that they can eat. Spandex capes and swords and heroes, multi-sided dice. Dice manipulation, ray guns, nothing will suffice.
Spice.
Aliens that want to probe and study life across the globe. In pan-dimension, cosmic sanctions, taking over all creation. Secret spies with laser eyes, never quite impeded.
One more time for Herschel!
Cutting slaughter propagated by a rampant trampling geek stampede.
Did like our impromptu harmonizing actually work for once?
Kind of.
Was I even on?
When were you singing?
The like two notes that I tried.
I don't think so.
At the very end I tried and it isn't.
We could go to the instant replay, but it frankly is ruining the game. I don't know if that's true.
I kind of like...
I like instant replay.
I like
that's such a vague... I like instant replay.
In the context of professional... I hate the podcast. This is so unprofessional.
Oh, God.
I didn't have any dinner. Well, I mean, other than this...
I was about to say, I didn't either, but my mother made me a nice pork roast, actually. So, and potatoes
like
and corn
dinner.
And everything.
It's like the definition of
it. Yeah, it was like a really nice dinner. And I was about to say I didn't have dinner.
Oh. So welcome to the Geek Stampede Comics Roundup for the week of Wednesday, October the 23rd. As always, I'm your host, Joey G. And across from me, we have Mr. Ryan Heth.
Hi.
And at a right angle to me, we have Mr. Robbie G.
Hello. Good thing we brought our...
Clever pants.
Clever pants. Yeah.
No Charlie this week?
I brought my Clubber Lang. I was going to say protractor, but Clever Pants works too.
Yeah, so no Charlie this week. He was arrested for exposing his genitalia to traffic.
To his girlfriend? Oh.
No, to the band Traffic.
Oh.
With Steve Winwood.
Okay.
He's like, dear Mr. Fantasy! Oh, balls!
Yeah, I actually love that scene in the movie Traffic.
When Charlie shows his balls to George Clooney?
Yep. Is it just because Charlie assumed that because the guy's name is Winwood, he would appreciate his wood? And he would, like... He's got a lost-in-translation issue
where, like, Charlie... Yeah.
He assumed that his last name was, like, a pun and that he likes to see people's dongs.
I'd say you could ask him, but when he called to ask me to bail him out, I just farted into the phone.
Steve Winwood phoned you?
Yep.
Before we talk about comics,
which we rarely do, I'm gonna talk a little bit about a little something close to my heart. I tweeted you to remind me to talk about this, or texted you.
Oh,
yeah.
Good thing you reminded me to remind you.
So I went to Chapters today, the bookstore, to buy a book.
The book store.
Yeah, I was getting some big boy books. Some books about woodworking.
Do they sell Kobos there?
They do. Actually, I bought the third book. You know
who wrote a great book about woodworking? Steve Winwood.
That's not true. Steve Winwood just played some kick-ass guitar licks.
Nick Offerman has a book about woodworking.
Yeah, I knew that. Anyway, so I went to Chapters, and you know they have them, like, plum cards and what have you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have one!
Right, exactly. Everyone does, because they're free and they're wonderful, and you get money off sometimes. So anyway, I'm checking out, and they have this app, I guess, now for Chapters that they're pushing pretty hard. They want everyone to get their app. It's an app.
Because an app a day keeps the doctor away.
And so she's like, we have an app now. And I was like, that's cool. She says, do you have an Android or iPhone? And for a second, I wanted to just say, like, no. Just because I'm like, I don't want to have this conversation. I don't care about your app. But then I kind of panicked and I went, yeah. And she went, oh,
doesn't sound like you.
Yeah, not at all. That sounded pretty.
Okay, panic has the wrong choice words, but I was just, I actually contemplated lying to her because I didn't want to have the conversation. Not because she was annoying. I was just like, oh, I don't want to hear about your stupid app. But anyway, I said, yeah, I do. And I think my thought was, my brain went to, have I used my phone while I'm in the lineup? Is she going to know I'm lying if I say no? I better not risk it.
If anyone says no, she knows they're lying. I mean, like, unless they're like an 8-year-old kid. And probably even then they have.
Well, definitely then they have it. It's only as an 85-year-old man. Yeah. He's got the same Nokia flip thing that he's had since he was 13.
I still can't figure out this newfangled, weird communist.
My phones work on dials, damn it.
Anyway, that's why I said yes, and so she starts talking to me about it, and like, from what I could gather, the only selling point that she kind of told me about the app, I mean, I assume you can browse her books on it, but like, her big selling point was that, like, you can just register your Plum Points card, and then you don't need to bring your card anymore with you, you can just use your phone. And in my head I was thinking, did the people at Chapters really think that the only thing tying me to my wallet is that I have nowhere else to put my Plum card when I'm walking around? Like, oh, thank God, I don't have to carry this cumbersome beast anymore. I'm still going to need my wallet. It's not like the Plum card is really damaging my life in any way. I got shit in my wallet that I don't even use.
Actually, my Plum card...
I use that card more than most.
I mean, oftentimes I don't bring my phone anywhere. I always bring my wallet, though, because it's got my identification. Well, because it's, like, got my Plum card, specifically.
If this was 20 years in the future, and, like, yeah, that's everything was done from your phone, then I'd be like, oh, that makes sense. But now I'm like... I still use my wallet. Like, I don't understand why you think this is a selling point. Like, are you telling me I don't have to carry my Plum card anymore?
I don't have to carry my utility belt for cards anymore?
I am no longer shackled to the behemoth that is this plastic card.
You then took off
this little package I carry with a bunch of other plastic cards in it.
You then ripped off your jacket that had all these other little faceted pockets on the inside that were lined with cards. It's like, I don't need this card anymore.
Take the one out and I'm like, yes! Now,
fucking one down.
No, even better. I rip off my, like, shirt and I'm wearing, like, a bomb vest and I'm like, oh, jeez, dodged a bullet, right, guys? I don't have to detonate this thing because I was thinking one more day.
Well, for a second there, I was thinking you had a vest that just had cards around it, but no, you were literally talking about
a bomb vest. No, I was saying, like, you just saved everyone in this store because now I'm no longer filled with rage. But anyway, I just thought it was weird.
Good thing the vest misfired, and then the second time you did it, your daughter phoned you and convinced you not
to. Come on, spoiler. Well, Jesus.
Nobody knows what I'm spoiling.
Yeah,
nobody knows.
Anybody who, anyway.
That was fucked. That was a great spoiler for Once Upon a Time.
But like, yeah, I mean, I understand that she's only telling me about this card because she's compelled to by her job. They tell her you have to try and sell this card to people. But if that's like the big thing in their meeting, tell them that they don't have to carry their plum card. They'll love it. And then I thought, am I the only one? Then I thought, I'm spending way too much time thinking about this.
Because guaranteed in those meetings, they say stuff like, well, you know how when you ask if someone has an Iron Orange card, and they say, oh, I forgot it at home. Well, solution.
I always thought that was weird. Whenever it is weird. Like, yeah, I have one, but I can't. I don't have it with me.
Because
like,
I, like, where do you
why?
Keep them?
Because you exactly. know why? Because they're bullshitting and they home? Don't have one and they don't want one.
Yeah. Well, no, but usually you look them up and then they go, because you can go, I can look it up for you and you find it for them. But I'm just like, why then?
Well, then
why do you not carry it with you? You have a wallet. I'm looking at it, and it's usually when I was a cashier at Indigo, it was two people who didn't have their cards. It was like middle-aged women who probably had their card with them, but they had 600 trillion things in their bag, so maybe they do need the app. And husbands who were like, I don't know, maybe my wife has one. I don't usually buy books. And I was just like, fuck you.
I don't usually buy books.
But I just thought...
I'm my wife.
Then again...
Her name is Melinda.
I'm Luther Rigg. When I worked at Chapters, there was this day where they sent us to Eau Claire Market for like a... Heather is the woman who owns this corporation, right? Heather something or other. Reisman?
I don't know. I just know that she's blonde and she likes depressing books that Oprah also likes.
Anyway, they said, we'll pay you if you go to her speech. Because she was doing like a roadshow to talk to the different people who work for Trappers around the country. So we got free popcorn and soda and we got paid for like 2 hours.
I want to go to there.
Well, exactly. So we were all like, shit, yeah, we'll go. Popcorn is great. And we had nothing else going on in our lives. We worked at Chapters. And, like, when they were there, she, like, made the announcement that they were going to be getting new vests. They were revamping the vests at Indigo. Mm-hmm. And the auditorium, like, erupted into cheers like Martin Luther King just gave a speech. And at that moment, I looked at my friend and we both just, like, nodded and realized we are not going to work here anymore. Because this is what happens when you work at this company too long. You become an old person who applauds vests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not suicide vests. Just like stitched embroidered vests.
I worked at Home Depot for more or less like a year and a half on and off. And I used to go to a lot of like paint retreats was what they called it.
It was like so, Bob Ross, the keynote speaker.
I wish, because that would have been something mildly interesting. It was like the different paint companies would take people from paint departments around Calgary and like get them all in a room. So you'd sit there and you'd talk about Home Depot to these fucking people because that's all you had in common with them was like, we both punch a button on a computer and then it goes bloop and then the paint goes whoosh and then you have paint. That's a color. And
are you sure you weren't at like a Foley artist class? Because those are some pretty good sound effects.
Like, we would go to those and it was like, you'd get paid, I guess, and they pay you for your miles, but like, it's literally like, oh, they give you lunch and it's a two pieces of bread with like butter and a tomato in it. Yeah, no, but it's just tomato and butter. That was it.
Well, speaking of mildly interesting.
And it was fucking the worst. And people would get excited because they'd be like, this paint doesn't need a primer. And like people would get like rounds of applause. Like not many people were there, but there'd be like 20.
There's like one guy in the back. Yes!
No, like.
Finally!
There was anywhere from like 20 to 30 people there usually. And
fuck
like,
primer. It was like 90 minutes.
And I didn't get it.
I heard that Hitler invented primer, eh?
That's what it was like. Oh, yeah. Fuck. I hate working for big corporation. Cunts.
Yeah, I love that that's your reason, though, for not liking working for big corporations.
Because they pay me to not be at work.
Because you're just like, stupid guys in their primer. Primer was paint. Other people are like, they're ripping the environment, bro. And Ryan's just like, primer tomato sandwiches.
The first one I went was like a really apparently wealthy paint company because they had like awesome sandwiches in ciabatta buns.
What?
And free vitamin water.
So basically they went to Sunterra and said, we need you
to cater
this lunch.
Yeah. And like, and it was at the...
Whereas the other one went to like their senile grandmother and we need you to cater this lunch. Alright, boys! Yeah. Margarine and tomato. There you go.
But like, it was at like that hotel on South Line of McLeod that's really nice and it was, the first one was great and then the second one was in like some shitty Legion.
Is that the one that's attached to Boomtown?
Yep. The meeting room.
My friend,
really nice.
My friend used to work at that hotel.
Were they masseuse?
So we are 15 minutes in. Okay, let's.
I fucking hate work. That's my moral story. No.
Okay, so we are going to talk about some comics this week. This was a really outstanding week worth of comics. We had all kinds of good stuff, and now that we've told our stories about our days in the trenches of retail, we'll move on.
Oh, I've got stories for years.
I didn't tell a story.
You didn't work in retail, really. I guess you worked at Chapters, too. Do you want to? We're
no, I want to talk about this. I want to talk about this. Okay, I was just being an asshole.
All right, so from IDW Comics, I picked up Samurai Jack number 1 by Jim Zub.
I didn't.
With art by someone Suriano.
The guy he worked
Andy
on the cartoon.
Suriano. Yeah, yeah.
He worked and worked on Powerpuff Girls. He worked on Dexter's Laboratory and all the Cartoon Network stuff. He was in the animation department for all those books.
So I would say this.
Shows, sorry.
If you have watched and enjoyed Samurai Jack, you will enjoy this comic. If you never watched Samurai Jack, I mean, you probably wouldn't have a clue what was going on.
You wouldn't pick it up anyway, I mean.
But it was really fun.
I had a blast. Yeah. I really liked the monster designs. Jim Zub is really funny.
Yeah, when Jack gets into the gladiator arena and has to fight all those guys at once, that was pretty sweet.
I also, I love how all the monsters and everyone peripherally is harping on his ponytail.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that Nick Kroll sketch, the ponytails episode, the ponytail sketch with Seth Morris and, I don't know. Ponytails are dumb, right? Right?
They're cool when
you're a samurai.
I used to have a ponytail, a little one, and it was fun.
Did you really?
Like, when I had long hair, I'd sometimes put up, but I couldn't get the front of my hair.
When did you have long hair?
Like, years ago, when we lived it, like, in that one house. So, like, 5 years ago. It was, like, not long, but it was long enough that I'd get the back into the ponytail, and the front kind of dangled, so I kind of looked like a pirate.
Yeah.
With both eyes and all limbs.
Well, not all pirates only had one eye. You're being racist.
Fun fact, actually, to become a pirate, to join the Pirates Guild, you had to pull one eye out.
Oh, I was going to do a spelling joke. Forget it.
There's no I in pirate.
There's two. Hey, here, I'm going to take
not
a turn.
Two?
Well, there's not none.
Pirate?
So no, we're all just
so wait, you're
up.
Saying it's either it's either two or nothing with me when it comes to spelling words?
Pretty much.
There's either two letters or nothing.
So
MISSIISSIIPPII.
I'm going to talk about my second favorite comic this week. I've been really enthusiastic about this series in the past, but this issue made it one of my favorite series, and I really, really look forward to every issue. This is Satellite Sam number 4 by Matt Fraction and Howard Chaykin. I read through it the first time last night, really enjoyed it, went back and reread all the synopses of the character, and then kind of the character's synopses and little bios at the beginning, and then reread or flipped through it again and was like trying to piece together, because a lot of the characters, when you're reading so many monthly series, it gets hard to kind of balance and juggle all those narratives. And so this was one
the characters all kind of look the same.
Yeah, it's Howard Chaykin stuff, yeah. Right? So everyone kind of looks similar. I mean, some characters, their only defining features are one has a cigarette and one has a cigar.
And one has a pipe.
And one has a pipe,
which is
kind
smart,
of stuff like that. Like, it's all excellent art, but they all, it's very similar style. And plus, being that it's black and white, makes them all kind of blend in a little bit more. Also, this series, more than most other series that we're reading, there's multiple plots. There's the main one of Satellite Sam's murder, of Carlisle White's murder, and Michael trying to discover or trying to solve it, and then going around with Kara Kelly, the Christian woman who turned out to be one of.
I thought it was Carrie.
Why?
Carrie Kelly from Homeland.
Oh yeah,
I was thinking, isn't Carrie Kelly a Robin?
Yeah, she is. I don't think her name is Carrie Kelly. I don't know. Carrie Matheson.
There you go.
Carrie Saul.
For some reason in my brain, I was like, her name is Carrie.
Isn't Saul really cool?
Saw?
Mandy Patinkin.
Saul. I said Saul. I like Saul.
Okay. don't mean to derail the derailment, but...
sorry, guys. Comic, please.
After flipping through it again, trying to get a better feel for what was going on, I went back and got my issues 1 through 3 and read it just from 1 all and reread 4. And now I have a way better feel for all the characters, for all the plot lines that are going through, for what was going on. I remember the last podcast we talked about issue 3 and Melinda Ginsburg, the sex... She's basically like the crazy nympho who has sex with the guy upstairs while they're having like a little business meeting. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be having coffee. And I remember we had a conversation going, we don't know who
trying
this
to remember
is.
Who they were, yeah.
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 But now
I... Now you know. Where
I
are you?
I follow the plot a lot more. I understand what's going on. And I love all the little nuances. Because when you're reading a monthly book and you read certain little bits like the conversation about the Dodgers game or the game
baseball.
That they were... The baseball stuff that they were following in this, that they were talking about in this... the kind of like the character development between the two people that were talking was lost on me a little bit, because I was like, I don't really remember who this is who's talking. So I kind of breezed over it. And then also the particular plot with Guy Roth kind of, you know, revealing to the audience that he's a homosexual working in a 1950s office like this.
Which was well received.
Yeah, exactly. The intrigue that actually is around that is really interesting. Also, the plot line between the other actors who are fighting for a bigger part. I mean, the weight of everything is just far bigger now. And all those little sequences have way more meaning now that I understand who these characters are now that I've reread the whole thing. And doing that made me really love the series even more. Just enjoy all of these little mini arcs.
This is like the only comic I read that feels like it is an HBO TV series.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
And I don't mean that like, oh, it's like a TV show, but like the way it's written and paced feels like you're watching something on HBO.
There's one main catalyst that flows through the entire series, but ultimately it's this really great ensemble piece.
Totally.
And it also actually is an expose on that work environment and that time period. So it's a culmination of all these great storytelling aspects that I really appreciate. And also, it's got the best covers in comics, always. So, issue 4, this was very nearly my pick of the week, this comic.
I do find myself constantly having to go back and look at the cast of the start to try to figure out who people are.
You know what?
But that's a strength of the series.
It is.
Really.
It is.
I don't know.
It means that it's really dense.
Not knowing who people are until I
go back.
But I mean, that complaint basically boils down to this book is smarter than I
was. It's complex. There's a lot going on.
There's too many characters. I can't remember who they are. It's
not so much that. It's so much that, like, I don't know. I think Howard Chaykin kind of draws everybody looking the same. And not to mention, there's three guys who smoke with mustaches, or two guys who smoke with mustaches.
Yeah, it's the 50s in New York City.
Well, yeah, this guy, and to an extent, this guy.
Guy Roth, Ginsberg,
they all look so similar that I'm constantly like, who the fuck is this?
Eugene Forward. Eugene Forward is kind of like the cinematographer or whatever, who's the crazy, like, sex hound who's constantly chasing after that blues singer
jazz singer. And looks so much like Hamilton Stanhope, who's like the supporting actor in the TV show. And like, I don't know, maybe it's,
if you like it enough, I honestly would suggest going back.
Yeah, that's
just like watching The Wire. When you're only halfway through a season of The Wire, like, I don't remember who everyone is yet.
Exactly.
See, The Wire, I do like
100 characters.
I associate stronger with like something like that, like a movie, like Moving Pictures.
Spend way more time with it. But spend an hour with each episode, once a month,
15, 20 minutes, 5 minutes.
Oh god, if I watched The Wire when it was on TV once a week, I'd be fucked. I would have no idea what's going on.
Rewatching The Wire right now, I'm already almost done season 2. It's so much just better. Because now I'm following every single little plot line a lot more, whereas the first watch through, there were a bunch of plots that I was like, I don't really know what's going on.
You know what I like better than The Wire?
My t-shirt?
I don't know. I was trying to know what the hell it is.
Have a nice t-shirt.
What is it? It says Good Friday Brawl. What the fuck is that?
It's a band.
Oh, I should have probably guessed that.
I thought it was a Jay and Silent Bob thing, because that totally looks like Jason Mewes to me.
Yeah, he does.
I was going to say Homeland. I like Homeland better than The Wire.
You like Homeland better than The Wire?
I haven't finished The Wire, so I can't really say it. But
what episode of The Homeland did you
really
just
like
watch?
Homeland.
The new one. I'm caught up.
You're already caught up? Okay.
I've
only watched the first two.
Dude, the last 2 minutes of episode 4 of Homeland season 3, my favorite 2 minutes of the whole series.
Yeah, you texted me that, but I was... I was driving.
I didn't say what happened then.
Homeland might be, in my opinion, the best show on TV right now.
It is the best show.
Boardwalk Empire.
I can't comment because I've only watched the first season and a half of that. It's very good.
Homeland and Boardwalk. I'm not disagreeing with you guys. Homeland is fucking beautiful.
Like, of the stuff I watch, Homeland I think is the best show. I don't know if it's even my favorite show, but I think it's the best show that I watch right now.
It's amazing.
But also, I watch like really dumb shows. So I still watch How I Met Your Mother. That gag died 6 years ago. The first episode, there's a running joke about how Mandy Patinkin just saying the word Mandy, or the name Mandy Patinkin, is like crack to old people, and it like calls the old people to them.
Because
old people love Mandy Patinkin.
Everyone loves Mandy. Like, why is that a joke? Everyone likes Mandy Patinkin.
But
we all just spent 2 minutes talking about how Saul was the best part of that show.
Yes.
So, like, that joke is just like, okay, let's make up some random thing that isn't true. Because Seinfeld used to do this. They would make up things, but all of them you'd recognize and be like, yes, this is funny that you're pointing it out. How I Met Your Mother makes up these things that don't make any sense. And they're just like, what the fuck are you talking about? Mandy Patinkin is an old people magnet. What does that even mean? It's just like, it's basically a Family Guy joke. And people who don't like Family Guy watch fucking How I Met Your Mother and tell me how it's funny.
I don't like
fuck that. You guys! Ah!
Hold on.
I feel like Cartman in... Not you guys. Although I feel like Cartman in that episode of South Park when everyone's telling him to watch Family Guy. That's how I feel about How I Met Your Mother.
I did just watch the clip of when Cartman becomes a NASCAR driver.
And we got to turn left! Yeah.
The press conference was just like the funniest fucking thing in the world.
He just keeps eating matches.
Yeah, that's a really
good episode. We need to talk a little more.
Yeah, about sorry.
The comic book podcast is very comic light this week.
As a bit of a segue from what you said 15 minutes ago, my argument for the best cover of this week.
This is a good
cover. Better than Satellite Time cover, in my opinion.
No, but...
I also like this cover. Where the fuck is my copy?
Daredevil issue 32 from Mark Waid and Chris Samnee with the coolest, like, just... Oh.
I want to make a request of this book.
Never end? Like,
it's going to end in issue 35. Did you guys not hear about that?
No.
35 or 36 is the last issue, but...
It's in the
Waid and
page.
Samnee aren't leaving the book. They're just it's going to be a relaunch Marvel, all new Marvel Now number one thing.
That's dumb. But anyway, I kind of like the idea of it going up in numbers, but I understand why they would change it. Anyway, no, I have a request of this book. I request that every single subsequent issue be drawn outside in the rain.
Okay. You mean like you want Chris Samnee to sit outside?
Yeah,
in the rain?
Yeah, exactly. I also want it to be red outside in the rain. I want it to be edited outside in the rain. But all the panels, I mentioned this on a previous issue, is that every panel where it's raining outside, like the colors pop.
It's a good looking book.
It's beautiful. The details of the splashing on people.
I had a nitpick about this issue, and then I went back and thought about it and went, I'm such an idiot.
I was going to be like,
the cover shows Werewolf by Night, but they only reference him by name. He's not actually in the issue. And I went back and was like, it's a cool cover. Shut up, Joey.
Yeah.
I love the Marvel monsters. They're like the coolest characters. I'm so glad they're using them. Like, they're bringing them all back, too. You got, oh, yeah, I guess he is there, too.
Yeah, he's right there.
Because I just remember them mentioning him. I didn't remember him actually showing up.
He's in one panel.
Russell is there.
Two panels.
Never mind, then I'm just stupid.
Wow, he's like panels.
What the hell was I doing?
He's actually the new Daredevil.
Hold on. So far, I've spotted him in three panels.
All right. I withdraw.
Three different pages.
In my defense, I also said that nitpick was stupid. But now we know it's really stupid. But yeah, I love all these characters. Like, you have, I forget the name, Simon something is the zombie guy. And Werewolf by Night is up there. Oh, this is so great.
So when they reboot this, are they going to... do anything with the continuity, or is it just going to be the same?
I think there's just going to be a status quo change of some kind.
Because I know that they're doing that with Avengers too, but technically, like, it has the old numbering as well. It just says number one on the front cover.
They do that
as well as
Marvel's done that before.
Yeah, they do this a lot.
I mean, well, I don't really care what number they put on the book, as long as Somni and Waid are still doing it, and they are. So
that's all I
do. I guess it doesn't really matter. It's just weird. It's okay for us because we're reading it now. It's like there's books like the G.I. Joe books that I like. When I wanted to go back and read them in order so I could like... Because sometimes they weave in and out of each other. There's like three G.I. Joe books. Mm-hmm. So you could just read one series, then another series, and another series. But if you read them as they were coming out, they do interlock a lot. Mm-hmm. So I had to like spend so long finding a reading order online so I could try and read it, simulating the experience of when it came out. And I was just like, this is so hard. Why can't it just fucking come out and have a number that goes from one to the next one and I don't have to do all this extra research
just to have my entertainment?
Or like, look, if you really want to do that, put a little fucking reading guide in the beginning of the trade and be like, you can read it like this. However, if you want to read it like an asshole, like Joey, for our readers who have OCD, here's what we're going to do for it. Anyway, you're right. This cover is pretty fucking great.
Oh, it's so... Yeah,
it's Halloween funny, style, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Halloween style.
I don't know. Daredevil's consistently, like, pretty dope. Pretty dope, you know.
So, we've only done three books, so I think we need to pound through a whole bunch. So, why don't we do a little segment that I like to call... Do you have we have a theme song for this, don't we?
I don't remember what it is.
Just make one up. It's the Joey G reads a bunch of shit that no one else reads. Joey G reads a bunch of shit. That was creepy. Ryan just came twice. He's good to go.
I'm doing the DMX bit. I'm the DMX.
Good job, asshole.
Sorry. Y'all go with me. I'm calling an audible. Usually I'm all like, here's some comics. This week, I'm going to do that, but I'm also going to talk about some digital comics that I buy from Comics.
Audible!
I always forget to talk about these, because I do usually buy some digital-only books every week on Wednesday, and I always forget to mention them on the show. So not this week, but we'll start with the print ones. Conan and the People of the Black Circle, number one, miniseries by Fred Van Lente and Ariel Olivetti, and you can see my fingerprints all the fuck over the cover.
I hate when comics...
Anywho, I love this. We were all sad that Brian Wood is going to leave Conan at 25, but Fred Van Lente is taking over, and I'm very happy about that because Fred Van Lente is fucking great. It's a very different Conan. It's bigger, it's more swashbuckling, and also this is like my favorite Ariel Olivetti stuff ever.
He's writing a bunch of DC stuff right now, isn't he?
Fred Van Lente?
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe. I know he's writing some stuff from Valiant.
Yeah, I knew he was doing that, but I don't know.
But just as an example, check out this awesome... Like, we're more than halfway through the issue before Conan actually arrives, but it's been so entertaining, you don't even realize that until you get to this page, you haven't seen Conan yet. And he's, like, big and muscular, and Ariel Olivetti drawing him, and it looks so awesome! And anyway, it's just a really fun story where Conan is going to help this princess, or, well, actually, he kidnapped a princess, but I assume he'll end up helping her, because she's, like, our hero. But there's some great stuff in this issue, and the fucking art is gorgeous, and I love it. And I was happy to read some Conan, because I haven't read any for a while since I switched to the hard... I've been buying all the Conan hardcovers, so I stopped buying the single issues, because I didn't want to...
Except for this one, it's...
Yeah, I just missed Conan, so I wanted to jump on a miniseries. So. Next, I read The Rocketeer and Spirit, Pulp Friction number 2 from IDW Comics. Huh. Mark Waid and Lawston Wallace...
Bill Murray by Sophia Coppola.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, he
that
did,
sounds
but
familiar.
He didn't do the second issue, but whatever. It still looks really good, and they got an artist who looks similar enough. This Mark Waid is pretty much incapable of writing a non-good comic, like not a fun comic, and this is definitely that. And Rob, it's a perfect companion piece to Satellite Sam because there's all this stuff about the invention of television in it.
Oh, really?
I mean, in a goofy science fiction way, but I just think it would be a really fun thing to read right after Satellite Sam. And there's great Rocketeer spirit adventures up in the sky, plane crashes, rocketeering. It's just so good. IDW has been putting out fantastic Rocketeer comics for a while now.
And they also put out Half-Past Danger, which is cool.
Yes, thank you.
And they also put out Lock and Key, which is maybe my second favorite comic book series ever.
So anyway, there was 4 comics that I bought from Monkey Brain Comics this week from Comixology. I don't know why I made this decision, but like a long time ago, I just decided to buy every comic that Monkey Brain Comics put out because they were 99 cents each. Mm-hmm. And I haven't read most of them, but I own a copy of every single Monkey Brain comic that they've ever published.
What's the one about mountains?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Crime.
High Crimes.
High Crime.
I haven't caught up on that.
I read the first issue and loved it, and then have not read the last like
three or four.
Yeah. I think up to 4 is out.
Yeah, I know I'm caught up.
I have them all.
I just read it last week. Yeah. Anyway, the first one I read was called The Army of Dr. Moreau, number 1, written by David Walker, art by
Starring
Carl Sciatiano. I don't know. It's Italian names, man. This was pretty good. There's this one trope that I don't know why this week it was annoying me, but whenever you have like, clearly this is based on The Island of Dr. Moreau, right? Which is an H.G. Wells story.
Also a Val Kilmer movie.
Yes.
With Marlon Brando.
Yes. But it's just this, I don't know why this trope has kind of gotten on my nerves where like the character who wrote the book that you're talking about and riffing on appears in your book and tells you that his story was actually based on real events. And it's just like, I'm so sick of that. Like, whenever they have a comic about H.P. Lovecraft fighting demonic monsters, I'm just like, fuck, enough. That's such an unoriginal idea at this point. So having the beginning of this book feature H.G. Wells talking about, oh yes, well the book was a toned-down version of what is really out there.
Oh, I see what trope you're talking about.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was a little lost there for a second.
I probably didn't explain it very well. Ryan, you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Or maybe I did explain it very well then.
Yeah, I got
I was like...
Anyway, I'm sure I said that in a profoundly stupid way. But having said that, that little trope aside, it was okay. It was a pretty fun little story. I mean, I like monster people. Animal monster people. And this has that.
Yeah.
And it looks like there'll be more as time goes by.
You know what else had that? Daredevil.
Yeah, Daredevil was better than this. But yeah, I thought it was fun. I'll read the next one. But anyway, then the next one I read was an anthology book. And I don't even really understand what the theme was or why it's called what it's called. I mean, if there was an explanation for that, I missed it. But it was called Amazing Forest. And it's just... the cover's really cool, actually.
About vaginas? About Bush?
Yeah. So there were four...
like George.
There are four stories in
about
here.
The Bush family?
They were all by Eric Freitas and Ulysses Farinas, but there were four artists. So the first story was called Art... No, it was not.
Wow, what a clever name.
The first story is called The Tank, but it says Art Tank. So and the first story was called Tank by a guy named... And it was art by...
It's art. You just didn't get it. You still get it. It's art.
This was actually a really good one. It featured basically this post-apocalyptic world where these last surviving humans are in this tank. And they're fighting these slime creatures who can make themselves look like your loved ones. And the one scientist is kind of getting to the point where he doesn't want to live anymore. He wants to be able to go and be with his family, even if they're not really his family. It was a really good story, and the art is fantastic. The second story was a book called Wolf Mother, which I did not like at all.
One of us had to do it.
I didn't mind the art, but I really fucking hated this story. I don't think I hate it. That's a bad choice of words. But it just didn't do a whole lot for me. Maybe I'm just too cold-hearted, but I don't know. It seemed like it was trying to be twisty and shocking and trippy, and it wasn't.
Trippy. When you said twisty, I was like WCW, Vince Russo era?
Yeah, like turns every just second.
Twists
like
and
swerves.
Turns.
Swerves. Third one was called Ronnie the Robot by Melody Offen, or the artwork by Melody Offen. I liked this one quite a bit. The story was really good. A lot of these are... They're short comic stories that usually have some kind of twist ending. That's sort of like the format they're going with. I called the twist ending on like page 2 of 8, but it was still it was a good little story. I liked it.
How was its forest section? Did it have an amazing forest section?
Oh, I get it. Amazing forest. I still don't understand why it's called
that. Because I'm trying so desperately to look for or listen for something that's like, oh, I get it why they called it that.
Yeah, I really don't know.
But I'm wondering
if it's like Forrest J. Ackerman from Famous Monsters of Filmland, but
I think it's that obscure a pull.
I honestly don't know.
This is like, I think they named it that because this is every creator's version of their own Forrest Gump, like their seminal work.
It's all just retellings of Forrest Gump.
Yeah, it's like this story is about monsters and stuff, and he's
why
there
just
because
he has Down
shot.
Syndrome
yeah.
means that he's a monster.
He doesn't have Down syndrome.
He doesn't have Down syndrome. He's just slow.
But it's like, I don't know.
The last story was called The Bird Watcher.
Would you say this book is like a box of chocolates?
The Bird Watcher was pretty good. Can I talk about the Bird Watcher? It has the kind of art that you would see like in like a Fantagraphics kind of indie weird. Table. This is a bad description. Anyway, it was a cool little story.
Me?
I think it was supposed to be a lot more poignant and like sad that it came across because I kind of thought it was sort of funny. Like, I think if you change the tone just like a tiny bit of the captions, this would be a hilarious, weird comic. But it's going for pathos, I think, and I guess it kind of achieves it. There's an owl with a person's face and hands or feet.
Ah! Like, my 4-year-old cousin likes to pretend he's that.
An owl with a face feet? And hands for feet.
Yep.
All right. So anyway, yeah, Amazing Forest. It had two good. It had one great story, one good story, one not so good story. So two okay stories, one great story, and one not very good.
So
story.
Okay, Forest.
Yeah. So okay, Forest. Exactly. Next up was another anthology book, which are great because they take me way longer to talk about.
Let's try and speed this up, guys.
Hey, quickly.
No, this is all comic talk.
Do you guys hear about the Energizer Bunny?
Just keeps going.
It was terrible last week. He was charged with battery.
So there was
just trying to break it up a little.
It's called Boo Number 2.
Did you hear about Duracell? It was the battery that they used when they filmed Lord of the Rings.
Was it really?
Yeah,
that's actually true.
Yeah,
I'm so pumped right now. I love Lord of the Rings.
Okay, right. So Boo is an old-fashioned horror anthology comic, but like a cheeky horror one, like an EC horror comic.
Cheeky.
It's very cheeky. And the framing sequence is a bunch of horror hosts from TV and radio and movies and whatnot in the Big Brother house, basically, trying to become like the last horror host.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, and those framing sequences are done by Calamity John Morris. But
one
fountain of comedy that I'm glad is never going to run dry is reality shows that take place with putting assholes in a house. Like, I liked Drawn Together. I thought that was a funny show. Okay. I thought it was funny. But
what I like, what comedy trope I hope never goes away is the trope of, like, bad horror puns being spouted by hosts of horror programs.
I just like puns.
That's what I like.
So.
The best. Well, they look like boils and ghouls. But anyway, the premise is, so they're all sitting there, all these hosts, and they cut away from them once in a while as one of them will start to tell a story like they would in the old horror comics. So the first one was called Sweet Tooth by Matt Smigel. And again, it's really funny. The art is great. You know on page two exactly what the twist is, but that so doesn't matter because the twist isn't what makes this fun. Like, it's just... Basically, this guy gets in a car wreck, and another guy, he sees him chasing this gingerbread man who's screaming, but he's very cute, and then he eats him, and then they both start eating this candy and discovering how delicious it is, and so they're kind of like going around through this burning, destroyed city, chasing down gingerbread man and eating them, and it's fairly obvious quite soon that they are zombies, and the zombies are seeing the people as ginger, as like candy people. So they're just running around eating and having a great time while the gingerbread men are screaming but still looking cute. And then like the last panel you see that like, yeah, they're zombies. So it's in no way a surprise, but it's just a really fun story. I really like this one. Then the next one, also awesome, by
How
Ken Lowry.
It's Forest.
This one isn't an Amazing Forest. This is a Boo.
This one's Boo Radley.
Okay.
Next one was called... Okay. The Night the Dead Rock Texas. And the only problem with it is they shouldn't have called the band The Dead.
Yeah.
Because I got excited and it has nothing to do with
immediately I was like, is it actually about just a bunch of hippies? Just
fun fact, actually the same night that the lights went out in Georgia.
You know who went down to
that
Georgia?
That was a weird like country.
The devil.
Well, the weird thing
he was
at the beginning of this issue of this story that the host like describes it like there's nothing like a good just band. And me, I love the classics. The Dead Kennedys, Susie and the Banshees. But lately, I'm like, really? You don't go for the Grateful Dead? Like, the most obvious one for me? Anyway, it's basically like this girl goes with her douchey boyfriend to, like, a punk rock show.
Rock-a-boo.
But she goes into the bathroom because she has to pee rather than be there at the beginning of the show. And the beginning of the show is these guys, like, possess everyone in the audience to try and... And Paul McGuin did the art for this. And she comes out and they're all, like, controlled and evil. And then she fights them with broken beer bottles and it's totally kick-ass. And she ends up killing the evil lead singer of the band and taking over the band. They're going on tour. It's like, this is awesome. So I really enjoyed it. It's very dopey. The art is awesome, but it was super cool. Then we had the confessionals page of all the different hosts in a confessional, like on Big Brother.
Oh,
which
sweet.
Was really funny. The best, because there's the six characters they have is the old hag, who's basically just like the Uncle Creepy or the Crypt Keeper or the old witch from EC Ones, and so she just does those gags. There's the one that's clearly the Elvira analog. There's guys named Agog and Magog that are basically Cain and Abel from House of Secrets and House of Mystery. Then there's this guy who's basically supposed to be Jigsaw from the Jigsaw movies.
Sweet.
Who's like the puzzler. But the best one is called like the Wandering Stranger, who's basically the Phantom Stranger. And all he does is always like hundreds of speech bubbles of him discussing how long he's been wandering in this very purpley prose, which is so funny. But in his confessional, he says, I began wandering as a boy, mostly near the girls' showers back then. I was called the Weird Peeper. And so they just like keep cutting back to this joke about the wandering stranger peeping on ladies.
Oh,
it's so stupid.
Did I tell you about the time I met someone who was on Big Brother?
Yeah, it was in Vegas.
I was in Vegas.
And you asked if he won.
And it was six in the morning, and I was walking back from Caesar's Palace with my friend Chris. Yeah, totally. Just wandering down the street wearing a suit that was just in shambles. I was just, sun is about to come up. And then by this point, I watched Big Brother this summer, shut up. And it was dog shit. I love it. But it's awful. And Big Brother had already been over for about 3 weeks. I already knew who won. And I even watched it. And I was like, and then I walk by and there's a guy walking towards me who is this inbred who is on this season named Spencer. He's got a big beard and he's a train conductor. Snap a doll.
And he's a Spencer?
He's
train
a
train conductor.
And he walked
Spencer?
Past me and this is how I deem this is my idea of...
You want me to be him?
Yeah. No, this is how I get someone I want to talk to his attention. I go, hey! And I just point at him while he's walking away and I go, you were on Big Brother. And he just goes, yeah. I'm like, he's kind of quiet. We're still walking away from each other. We're now about 5 feet from each other, the opposite direction. I just,
did you win? He goes, no, Andy got me out third. I went, ah.
Tough
keep, keep trying. Keep on keeping on. Just walked away. And then he walked off with his friend, and my friend went, who the fuck was that? And then I just, don't worry about it. We just kept going.
So anyway. The last comic in this comic was called The Last Seance by Kyle Starks. This was the most like a regular, normal EC twist-ending horror comic. It was good. The ending is, like a lot of them are, kind of far-fetched, but it was fun. I enjoyed it. And I guess there's going to be another issue, hopefully next week, I think? Because I assume this is for Halloween, and next week is kind of it, right? So, anyway, I highly recommend the Boo series from Monkey Brain. And now we have one more. This one will be really quick.
Boo.
It was called Old Red 2203X. So it's kind of like, remember in Mega Man, it was the year 2000X.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Mega.
So this is the weirdest fucking comic I've ever read. Like, there's these dog and cat people, and then there's monsters, and I think the dog person is trying to find the monster. It was really weird.
What?
And then, like, it.
Did he win? Did you win?
Yeah.
How was the forest?
It was pretty amazing.
Was it
Boo? I liked it. I'm going to read the next one. And I like the art because the whole thing is kind of... Like, the framing sequence is kind of like an old...
Sega game?
Sega walk-around beat-em-up kind of a game. So it's just... It's a really weird comic, but I really liked it. But it was so weird. Him fighting this monster in a gas station, but he's a dog. And I think there's... So luckily, the thing was at the end of the comic, there's like a title page that explains what the fuck the comic is about. And I was like, I kind of wish this was at the beginning of the comic.
Yeah.
Because it totally sets up...
Here is what you just read.
Yeah, it basically sets up like the premise of the universe, kind of. But yeah, it was good. It was weird. It reminded me of like Demolition Man meets like Final Fight, those side-scrolling beat-em-up games, meets a bunch of dogs.
Weird.
But... Yeah, it was really weird, but I kind of dug it. So that is all I have for you boys here on Joey G Reads a Bunch of Weird Shit. That took a long time.
Well, while Rob gets ready here, I'll tell another zinger.
Please do.
This one's probably my favorite one of all time. Okay, so a dyslexic man walks into a bra.
Yeah, see?
Hilarious. I had to explain it to my mom.
I just read a bunch of comics no one else reads.
Okay, right into a new segment. Robbie G reads the sea. Why the fuck does he?
And you smell like 1, 2.
How does Moses make his tea? He brews it.
Oh, ah! Okay, so I'm going to talk really quickly about Justice League number 24 by Jeff Johns and Ivan Reis and Joe Prado and Albert.
Ivan Reis of the famous peanut butter
Uncle
cup family.
Albert.
So this follows Ultraman's escape from Earth 3 Krypton, or the 3 universe Krypton, going to Earth 3. And Joey's on
that. I'm sorry, I just saw a GIF. It shows these two hot dogs, and like at the bottom it says, if your mustard tastes, the hot dog tastes like it's made of wood, who are you going to call? Ghost mustard, and this bottle of mustard just flies over top of wires.
Okay, so throughout this, it's a very, very familiar sort of genealogy story. It's the story of Superman, but what if Superman was raised by jerks and
Isn't
he was a jerk
Superman
himself?
Red Son?
Yep, pretty much. And when it finally gets to present time, I mean, it's the setting up of the secret society. We see Jimmy Olsen, we see Lois Lane. At the Daily Planet being frightened because the world has been taken over by the Secret Society. They're wondering when Superman's going to show up, but instead Ultraman comes. It culminates in a really, really fun fight between Black Adam and Superman, which I loved. This book is definitely worth picking up specifically for Ivan Reis' art. And it is like a really fun action-adventure book. Jeff Johns has always been really good at delivering really big, high concept sort of superhero, you know, muscle cape stories. What he sucks at is making them talk. Because when they say things, they sound like fucking idiots. There's a sequence at the very beginning that is Jor-Il and Lara from the Krypton from the third universe. And instead of everyone being like, oh no, Krypton is... you know, imploding upon itself. We must save our child. Their attitude is, we are going to shoot everybody to make sure we get the last pod because everyone sucks and our son is going to be the strongest. And then as Ultraman is being shot to Earth, this is the last thing that's said between Lara and Jor-El. Lara says, this is your fart.
Jor-El, this is your fart.
This is your fart.
Okay, that kills my license to Jor-El joke.
You know, so that didn't kill the momentum of my joke at all. So anyway, fuck. The last thing that's said between Jor-El and Lara is Lara goes, this is all your fault, Jor-El. And he says, shut up and die, Lara. And
good one.
Then they do. And it was so bad.
It's totally awesome that you keep reading comics that this guy writes.
Jesus.
So good at it.
That's very reminiscent of me.
So you came back to die with your city.
No. I came here to
fight you or whatever I say.
So there's another sequence. And I know I rag. I rag on John's a lot and new DC stuff.
Fair and deservedly so.
However, I still stand by this being a fun adventure comic. I enjoyed it. It's a fun series. For someone who's a fanboy like I am of these characters, yeah, I still really enjoy it. I've enjoyed the shared universe and I like the story right now. I really feel as though he's on, I don't know, crack or something when he writes some of the dialogue. There's a bit where Grid is basically the robot that fused himself with Cyborg to make him Cyborg to save his life.
Grid pro quo.
Yeah, good one. And here's the other stupid thing. Like, okay, so they have Grid hanging out at the Secret Society base to tell them what's going on in the world. Why don't they... Like, they have Google. They all have... Whatever. Anyway.
Also,
I have it on my phone.
Speech bubbles are really annoying.
Presumably Cyborg has it in his face.
Yeah, I mean, but anyway.
His speech bubbles are really annoying.
Yeah, they're written in this really stupid
way.
lettering way where the inside of each one of his bubbles looks like a computer chip and it's bright green and yellow and then the text on it is black, so it's really an eyesore to actually read. That's a technical problem with this book. But again, back to this horrible, horrendous dialogue. So Ultraman is chewing out Grid, being like, you're complaining about things you have no right to complain about. I didn't hire you to think. I hired you to be, Windows 8 when I could have just bought Windows 8.
That is the weirdest analogy. I didn't hire you to be Windows 8.
I'm so confused.
First of all, don't buy Windows 8. Friends don't like friends
computer.
Buy
basically, and then the response that Grid gives is, I am a computer virus attempting to evolve into something that can think and feel. Ultraman, I long to feel something. If you can't feel anything.
And then there's a pause, and then there's a fart.
And he said, this is your fart.
This is
Ultraman.
Your fart. This is for you.
But, like, okay.
Oh, no, sorry, that was just the elephant. Here's the fart.
Stupid, bad dialogue aside, okay?
There's a baseball ad, so
this is a robot who longs to think and feel. He wants to feel, and he knows he longs to feel. Longing is a feeling. He's feeling like he wants to feel. You have to let the feely man feel. I want to feel. I feel sad because I can't feel. Well, that's you feeling, you fucking idiot. Why would you write that in your script? That's so stupid. Why would the robot is actually lamenting the fact that it can't feel. It's lamenting.
You know what this reminds me of?
It's so stupid.
As a robot, I have no emotions. And sometimes that makes me very sad.
That's exactly what the fuck
happened. And then he eats his blanket.
Oh my god, exactly. Yeah.
You know what this
so
dialogue
stupid.
Is? This dialogue is disturbingly crappy, DC.
Hey, DC,
don't
care.
Anyway, that's the end, Robbie. I also read the Digital Adventures of Superman, but in print, and it was Marcus Toe and J.T. Krull, and it was a very by-the-numbers, boring Superman story, but still a worth it series to be picking up, because every issue before that I really, really enjoyed. Anyway, that's the end of that segment, fuckers. Seriously.
I'm so sad that I can't feel.
Seriously, that, like, is a Futurama
dumbest fucking shit. But it's supposed to be, like, deep, and it's supposed to make you bummed out when you read that, and I just laughed my head.
It makes
like,
me bummed out because I know that you spend money on that.
That's so stupid.
Anyway,
I'm going to talk about this quick, and then I'll talk about this.
Okay. First, quickly, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, issue 28.
Like
Spider-Man. Issue 28 from Brian Michael Bendis, Dave Marquez on the artwork, who I fucking love. I just love Dave Marquez so much. And his artwork's really nice, too. But he's just such a handsome gentleman. anyways, we kind of... That's okay.
Sorry.
Jeepers.
Okay.
I know. We get kind of a tie-up to this whole Rocks and Industry thing. And all the stuff that's kind of happening with Cloak and Dagger and Bombshell. They confront Mr. Roxon.
Is this kind of the end...
Rodney's
or
cousin.
Not the end of Ultimate Spider-Man, but it's the end of, like, his big... arc.
Yeah,
ultimately.
The big Spider-Man No More arc, which actually kind of ended like 4 issues ago when he was like, okay, I'm Spider-Man.
But yeah, but now he's accepted it. Like, yeah. Up until this point, he was doing it, or in the arc, he was doing it out of necessity.
Yeah.
Just to get the shit out of his life. He had to finally just put this last thing to rest, and then at the end, he accepts that this is who he is, and he wants to be this.
Yeah. At the end, he meets with Yankee, and he's like, I am Spider-Man.
It's a very good tie-up to, like, the whole story of Miles Morales, yeah. Actually. I think that's what he's kind of going for. There's a little seed planted with the relationship between him and his father.
Yes.
Because there's some mystery still with
with his dad and
his father's past.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch of stuff with S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, there's a bit with S.H.I.E.L.D. at the end. But apparently this cataclysm thing with Galactus kind of like 616 Galactus invading the Ultimate Universe.
Do you just think
over.
That it, I think I it's know. Just going to collapse the Ultimate Universe and put Miles Morales in the 616.
I
think that's all it's going to do.
I can see
and
that.
Then they're probably going to renumber Ultimate Spider-Man or something.
They'll renumber it to like number like 40.
That's my guess just anyway. I'm probably wrong, but because this is the only Ultimate book that really sells anything that anyone gives a shit
I can
about.
Imagine so. From what I've read, it's the only one that's actually...
So it's kind of a pointless line to keep
it. Do they still do the other ones?
Yeah, they
oh,
do.
Yeah.
X-Men
and Ultimates. And then
Ultimates. But, I mean...
That's a dope cover, though.
Like, the whole purpose of the Ultimate Universe, you know, its whole
purpose
reason
is
for existing...
Done.
I mean, it doesn't really matter anymore. People, it turns out people don't really care that much.
Well, and
they
especially
just like good
in this
stories.
Day and age, because they're like, well, we want to retell these stories because there's so many years of continuity and blah, blah, blah. And now there's Google and Wikipedia.
And Marvel also goes out of its way.
Yeah,
more
to
Marvel.
Make it,
that everything goes back to number one. We just talked about that with Daredevil.
Yeah.
So
it's very
there's jump-on points.
On.
And
yeah. If you know, like, oh, Spider-Man is a Spider-Man,
yeah.
Like, you're good.
I wouldn't mind Miles Morales being in the 616 because I imagine the stories would be pretty much the same. It's just Bendis writing Spider-Man. So sweet. And
yeah.
I love Miles Morales. So
yeah, it was really cool. It was a good issue. It's always good. Good time.
Good
it's always
good
time.
In Philadelphia.
Alrighty. And then I'm going to talk about Rat Queens here. Rat Queens issue 2 from Curtis J. Weave and Rock Up Church.
I really love this series. I'm having such a good time reading this
it's
series.
It's such a fun, like, fantasy book that kind of takes fun of a lot of the
fantasy,
tropes.
Yeah. It's basically like if you and your friends are playing D&D and not taking it seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is what
fun.
I would
which
do
is
what I love about
D&D.
It.
That's when whenever I play D&D, that's what I would do. Like, we were
I've never played D&D.
No?
And I probably never will.
You asshole.
I don't have imagination, so... I have something in my eye, though, that's, like,
yeah, it's your
bothering
people.
Me.
You.
It's part of, that's no. Actually your imagination, too.
It's my
your
contact.
Imagination is that powerful that you just think that there's...
really red?
No.
No. Because it's, like, keeps watering and sore. Anyways, Rat Cream. Rat Queens.
Rat
Cream.
Rat
Cream. You need some Rat Cream for your eyes.
This is all your fart.
This is your fart.
There's a lot of like fun banter between these characters, this main team. I love this part where she talks about how she just sank the last Rigold into getting her armor repaired from the last quest. And then the little girl says, I spent mine on Vic Candy. I don't know. I just think this is like a fun little silly banter book. This is right up my fucking
alley. I like
alley.
Candy.
Yeah, this is a great banter
book. It's good.
This is a perfect
a cool fantasy
contrast
universe.
To a different book that came out this week that while I think it's good, it's not my thing at all. Whereas this is more my thing. I don't know. This book's cool. That's all I really
thing
have
is
to say.
Smelly.
I get a super...
big boner when you see men.
Ladies?
No, I don't know. Some pages, like,
I get a really Fiona Staples feel from Pages. This last page,
the coloring,
the coloring looks digital. The coloring is digitally done. It has. I'm pretty sure it is.
Even just everything in that page reminds me.
Well, it's really it's really glossy paper and really bright colors.
No, like the pencils and stuff too.
The pencils,
there's
maybe Rock Up Church does some
pages,
digital
some pages
art as well.
I think he must,
because he does all the artwork. Like, there's no color artist, isn't there?
Yeah, I think he does more or less everything.
Yeah, he does everything.
Yeah, but like,
I'm pretty sure it's digital.
Yeah, I get a super Sega-ish vibe from it, which is not a bad thing.
Sega.
But yeah, this is a gross.
Was that an inward?
I couldn't help myself. I'm sorry. Jesus. It just kind of slipped.
Hey, so what do you think? But talking about comics or a segment or
game?
You want to play a game, or do you want
to play
comics?
That game. Play it.
Because I got a bunch of comics. All right.
I want to play a game.
I almost did the Bane voice for the guy from Saw.
It's time to play the comics quiz. Do you know what the answers is?
Nope.
Can you bask in the glory and the fame of being our own comics roundup? Can
this is your fart.
All right. So today's comics quiz.
Why is it a Jack called a Prince?
All right, is
like
a
King Queen Jack. Why isn't it Prince?
Okay,
I don't know what it is.
So this is the controversy edition. Controversial controversy. All right, so we'll start with Ryan here.
Joey's on Wikipedia, so I win.
Okay, Ryan. In Spider-Man One More Day, the arc. Mm-hmm. Spider-Man One More Day. Peter Parker makes a deal with whom in order to revive Auntie May?
I believe it's Mephisto, the boss from the third act of Diablo 2.
I think it's Mephisto Pure Bottom. Do I get a point for that? I totally did that.
Okay, well, Joey gets a half point. Ryan gets a whole point.
Woo, why does Ryan get a whole point?
Well, because he's right.
But mine was Mephistopior ass. Oh, your boy.
Whatever.
Mephistopior boy.
When I shove something up a bottom, I shove it up a bottom.
Mephistopior bottom.
My butt feels threatened right now.
All
right,
so that's one to one half. That's good. That's good.
Roll last, trust me.
Joseph. Joey. Right. In 1987.
I was born.
Give yourself. That was my question.
Who was born?
For being born 30 years ago? I'm just kidding. Okay. I'm
old.
I'm giving myself a point for that.
Okay. So in 1987, John Byrne wrote a story. It took place across issues 592 and 593 of Action Comics. It was a story involving Superman filming a what?
Porno?
Yeah, actually. Did you know that?
Know that.
Okay. A sex tape with Mr. Miracle's wife, Barda.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
That's really weird.
Yes, it is.
All right.
Barda's boobs.
Okay, Ryan. So Joey's got like 2.5
It's not Ryan, it's Ryan.
2.5 to 1.
Ryan, how many points do you have?
It's not Ryan, it's
just
Ryan.
Just the one.
Just one.
Oh, okay.
You haven't heard that it's Ryan Sandberg, it's R-Y-N-E, and he does an interview where a guy calls him Ryan all the time, and then he goes, it's not Ryan, it's Ryan. And he says it really fast, so it's not.
Okay, so
I don't know who that is. So
Ryan Sandberg,
story
third
base
from,
me.
I think, the
So
Chicago
a
Cubs.
Very controversial arc in the DCU.
Noah.
I am.
How big are you going to make it? Big.
Big.
All the animals.
Pretty big.
The whole town's going to talk about
That's
it.
That's really controversial.
That's using all of our lumber.
You won't need it. You'll be...
Rona is sold out.
You'll be dead.
You'll be
this
dead.
This little one's not worth the effort.
All right.
God's voice comes in. This little one's not worth the effort.
God sounds a lot like Bane.
Okay, so Ryan, in Brad Meltzer's Identity Crisis, there was a mystery trying to solve the murder of who?
This is one of my favorite stories.
One of my favorite stories, too. It's an excellent story. Rags Morales?
That's my answer. Rags Morales.
Sue Dibney. Who killed Sue Dibney?
That's Sue Dibney.
The
I'm
wife
sorry,
of the elongated
Laura Palmer was my second guess.
Would you like me to tell you who committed the murder?
Plastic Man.
Jean Loring, who later became the new Eclipso.
She was
That was super cool. She uses the Atom technology to escape.
And it's weird because like it's a dark story, and really I usually get grumpy about dark comics, but that's just so well done.
It's Brad Meltzer's a really good detective.
He is, like, and Ragnarok, that's the best work Ragnarok has ever done.
Brad Meltzer's brother Dave is a great wrestling journalist.
I don't know. Meltzer's okay.
He just has the connections.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Which is good.
Joey.
Yes, sir.
So, which controversial death is the catalyst for the Trinity War in DC Comics? You would have had to pay attention to me.
Yeah, hang on. I think I know this. Because Superman kills the new Dr. Light?
No, the Archduke Ferdinand.
Oh, of course, yes.
And,
in Prussia.
As a sub-question,
yeah.
What was his favorite band?
The Archduke Ferdinand's favorite band?
Yeah.
Franz Ferdinand?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, yeah, I got a point for that, right?
Yep, half.
Yeah. So, hang on. I know that jokes are jokes on the podcast here, but can you just... Was I right? Is it actually Dr. Light? Yeah. Okay, cool.
Well,
I listen to you.
All right.
I thought that was like Infinite Crisis or something.
No, no. Dr. Light, in Identity Crisis, there's a whole thing with Dr. Light.
Doesn't he rape somebody?
Yeah, he rapes Sue Dibney.
Ah.
Anyway.
See, I should get a point for just knowing that.
Ryan. Why the last man?
He actually got it out before he started laughing, though. That's pretty good. Brian, why the last man? Do you think anybody asked, like, Brian came on that when he was doing press? So, Brian, why the last man? And he's like, what about it? And they're like, no, why
the last man? You weren't kidding earlier when you told me about the caliber of jokes, were you? But there's so many
Ryan,
jokes.
Ryan, can you name the character from Shakespeare that the protagonist of Why the Last Man is named after?
Yorick.
That's right.
Alas.
Do you know what play that's from? Because I know you know the name of the character.
King Lear?
No, Yorick actually isn't in Hamlet, but Hamlet, alas, poor Yorick.
Alas, poor ampersand.
I was the last man. But also,
can I give Ryan half a point for
why
for
maybe
saying
who?
King Lear?
Why the last man, Ryan?
Why not? There you go. Why not the last man?
You get the point for that?
Yeah, he gets like 5 points. now, 1 point.
Now, like 5 points.
No, right.
Amount of points.
Now, write like five. Like,
okay.
I don't know, like five.
Yeah.
So you have 2 points, but really like six.
Yeah.
Okay. Champ.
No, because you only have 2 points.
Like six? Yes.
Okay. Joey.
Yeah.
So Jim Carrey recently denounced this film due to its excessive violence.
I know the answer, but it's going to be something like The Sound of Music. But I'm going to say Kick-Ass 2.
Steals. Sense and Sensibility.
No, we were looking for two answers. He denounced two different things. Liar, Liar, and the Miley Cyrus twerking video.
I would like to come out on the record. And
he punches
also,
himself in Liar,
like
Liar.
I would like to come out on the record and also denounce the Miley Cyrus twerking video.
But not Liar, Liar. That's a funny move.
Well, Liar, Liar is actually one of my favorite Jim Carrey
movies. He beats the shit out of himself in the bathroom.
I'm kicking my ass! Do you mind?
It's pretty violent, man.
So
Ryan.
No points are
so no points.
It's the claw when Carrie Elway does.
1 point to Miley Cyrus. So, Ryan.
She's just making her way in the world.
The Joker murdered which character due to a poll by fans? There was a poll judging who...
Phone to decide whether he lived
or died. Jason Todd.
No, Osama bin Laden.
Oh. Why so serious?
Did he also kill Abu Nazir?
Yes.
You're just spoiling shit left, right, and center.
How is, like,
Dick Cheese?
There's a character in Homeland named Abu Nazir. You learned that in the first episode.
As a follow-up question, as a sub-question, you get a sub-question as well. Who is resurrected in Under the Hood?
Jesus.
No, my 94 Dodge.
Yeah, I was going to say the car from Christine.
Fucked it up!
You were gonna
we
say,
went to the same place!
You were
going
to say your 94 Dodge Spirit, weren't you?
I love, though, that we both went to the same place. Like
a car.
Car.
Yeah.
So do I get a point for that?
Yeah.
All right,
Ryan
so,
should get... Do I get a point for knowing that it was a 94 Dodge Spirit, though.
Yeah, Ryan gets, like, 7 points. Like,
okay.
I don't know, like seven.
1 point.
Okay, so
like
is that
seven.
The last question?
There's one more question. You both can... because it's tied.
Well, actually, the scores like are tied. Ryan with 3, but like 7. Joey with 5.5. Miley Cyrus with 1. And Charlie with 0.
Okay. Wow, Charlie sucks.
I know. He just... He's
Charlie's not good at this round, man.
I know.
He'd be better if he actually answered a question.
Okay, so here is the last one. This is going to be the tiebreaker. Miley Cyrus, you can phone in. If you're listening to this,
he turned your phone on. When she just
actually turned his phone on. She's sitting in her Miley cave, right? The cave. No, runs in. There's like a red light. It's like, Miley!
I'm a professional. And
she's
I'm,
like,
I wanted to make sure she had the opportunity to phone in.
You know we're about to make history, right?
Okay. All right. So,
here we go.
So you each have a buzzer. Let's establish your buzzer sounds. Ryan, what's your buzzer sound? All right. Joey, what's your buzzer sound?
Peccadillo.
It should be something a little faster. Say it really fast.
Peccadillo.
Okay. All right. Okay. So this is a story arc that took place over Amazing Spider-Man issues 509 to 514. And it involves the Green Goblin impregnating someone. And the arc was called Since Past. What is your answer?
Is the question who he impregnated? I didn't understand the question.
Who Green Goblin impregnated who in Sins Past? Buzz in.
Gwen Stacy.
Well, he buzzed in.
I did buzz in.
I what? But you had to buzz in.
Oh, I thought I buzzed in before.
It was Gwen Stacy. It was written by J. Michael Straczynski, and I'm pretty sure the art was by Mike Diodato.
No, your mom.
Oh, are you telling me?
That's weird because we all have the same mother.
So your mom gets one. So the score is at the end.
I thought I'd buzzed in.
Ryan, you put up a good fight, but with 3 points, but like 7.
Yeah,
but only
like
3 points.
Like 7.
You came in second. It was a well.
How did
battle.
I come in second? I have like 7.
You have like 7. You actually
like
7. Have 3, but it's like 7. But it's
how
three.
Many do you have?
5.5.
5.5? And like 7 is more than...
No,
well,
3 is less than
I
5.5.
Refuse.
Shake my hand, cock sniffer. You're a sore loser.
Mm-hmm.
Fine, you know what, Ryan?
I'm also
Rob,
a, I'm also
being a sore loser.
I'm also
you can take away 3 points, but it's like minus 14.
Well, you can take away some of Charlie's points.
Okay, Charlie has minus 12.
I'm a sore loser and a late snoozer.
So Ryan, so okay, in last place is Charlie with negative 12 points. In a two-way tie for third place, it's Miley Cyrus and your mom. In second place, Ryan with 3, but like 7. But 3.
Yeah,
and
in first place.
Continuing my streak, Ryan is me as the winner, 5.5 points.
Good job, Joe.
Thanks. Job. I appreciate that. You know, I have a good time doing this.
Yeah.
You know,
I really don't.
And let's say thanks to Rob for putting this together. And really, why the last man?
Why? I don't know.
Let's plow through the last couple books.
Why
boys.
Not? Didn't I get that one right? I have no more books, really.
Okay, I'm going to talk really quickly.
You're
about
like Fahrenheit in 451.
What?
I'm so
you
mean.
Have no more books. You're like Fahrenheit in 451. Did anyone like this? Because I still don't.
I like the art. Savage Wolverine.
Yeah, the
I enjoyed good. The art.
I have nothing
Jock,
else to say about it.
Yeah, Jock is a spectacular artist, but ultimately the story is just meh. Whatever. I'll talk about another book for 2 seconds. This is the end of the Unwritten Fables arc in the Unwritten Part 5 of 5. This is the end of Volume 1 of the Unwritten by Mike Carey and Peter Gross. This is issue 54. A lot of information about that one cover. Bill Willingham and Mark Buckingham also contributed. Bill Willingham really didn't do anything. He just let Mike Carey write about his characters, which were, you know, public domain anyway. But it was a really interesting dynamic setting it in the Fables universe. I was a little, you know, I would have preferred it being like perfectly original in the Unwritten universe. However, again, as I said before about this particular arc, like it makes sense, and it's a good way that he ties it together. It's not really a gimmick; like it actually had a lot to say about story and the existence of the existence of story and its importance within the Unwritten world. And this is the end of the first volume. In 3 more months, it's going to come back with a new number one and. It's going to be a maxi series of 12 issues called Apocalypse, and it leaves on quite an intense cliffhanger that is beautifully illustrated by partially by Mark Buckingham, by Peter Gross, by Dean Ormston. Who else? I think that's it actually. But really, really
interesting end to the first volume. Unwritten is one of the best comic series coming out today, so it's definitely a series I would recommend to everybody. Also, did you... I think you read all... you didn't read...
I didn't read Mind Management, but I did read The Mask That Would Kiss Me.
Okay, so Mind Management was my favorite so far of the single, like the episodic ones.
I'm a couple issues behind, so I'm looking forward to catching
He does some really interesting stuff with prose work, like actual stuff ripped out of journals and books and stuff, and out of a sci-fi book. And he does this really amazing thing with SFX. There's a bit where the main character is sleeping in bed and there's a loud noise and it just says thunk, but it's like carved into the baseboards.
Onomatopoeia.
Yeah, it's very cool.
I like that word.
I'm gonna have to pee. Anyway, this was my favorite issue of this arc of Mind Management. This is always my favorite.
I really gotta get around to reading that fucking beautiful hardcover.
It's
fucking amazing. I love Mind
Management. The Massive, Rob.
Yeah.
Number 16. Longship Part 1 of 3, Pitch Black by Brian Wood and Gary Brown.
It was interesting. It was the first time... We were talking about this before.
Yeah.
It was the first time we really, really... Like, he goes out of his way to make you not like Callum and Israel.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I wanted to ask you because I read it and I was like, I've always not... Callum Israel has never been the character that I actually am interested in the story. He's an interesting character, but he's not a likable character.
And he's a good anchor. He's a good anchor because it is an interesting plot, because the whole plot is, what would the environmentalists do when there's no more environment to take care of?
Like, I guess because the world has sort of come to an end, so it wasn't until this issue that you kind of are reminded... Oh yeah, that's what these guys are. That's what he started out to be. He's a fucking dickhead who's going to stop people from murdering whales, in his words, which is laugh out loud stupid. But I like the way that he's clearly being set up to look stupid. You know, like, it's complicated. It's not black and white, but this is the first time where you don't feel even remotely... At least I didn't feel even remotely sympathetic towards anything Callum's doing.
I felt sympathy for him in a different way. In the sense that I felt sorry for him.
Yeah, but what he's doing makes you not want to feel sorry for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you're being an idiot.
Because the arc, like the past 15 issues have been leading up to Mutiny.
You've been watching him like become part of the scene.
Yeah, he is the captain of a ship where all of his crew think that he's crazy and he's wasting their time. And a lot of the other characters, Meg is... trying to leave the ship and has completely different ideas of what they should be doing with their time and resources. Yeah. Mary has abandoned him for now, and also he's dying. I mean, he's got a terminal illness, so now this is his last chance to really recapture what defined him before the world ended.
Yeah, it's cool that the only character who really supports what he's doing right now is the really naive, stupid girl on the boat. Like, this is the first time she's like, yeah, this is what we... That's why she got involved, because he murders whales. So I thought it was cool the way he'd, like, the intelligent grown-ups on the boat are all like, this is crazy, this is a waste of time, and this is...
Yeah, I mean, he's going after a whaler...
Subsistence fisherman,
basically. Yeah, who literally has one harpoon that he throws by hand, and they're on a Viking ship. They're on, like, a shitty
old longboat. They're subsistence fishermen that maybe harvest 10 of these whales a year, and at the very beginning of the issue, they address the fact that this whale is not only not endangered, it is thriving after the post-crash.
Yeah, it says here, mink whales number close to 500,000 in North America, classified as least concern in the conservationalist sense. Their numbers have only grown post-crash. So since the end of the world,
really,
they're thriving.
Yeah, like, so like, the first time I read this, I was like,
and humans
I don't
aren't.
Know what's going on. What just happened? And then I kind of went back and read it again. I was like, we're really watching Callum come apart at the seams.
I think the more that we're talking about it, the more I actually really liked this issue, actually.
Yeah, I do too, actually.
It's really interesting.
I was really kind of, like, conflicted when I finished it, because I was like, this was the first time I felt like there was politics beyond just the cool science fiction black and shades of gray universe that this world existed in. And in this issue, we're seeing two characters. One character who's decided that it was simpler when things were black and white, and he's going to try and continue to be like that. Whereas the adults in the world around him are all like, this is crazy.
I mean, there's a sequence in this where it clearly shows Callum values the life of this whale that is part of a population that is thriving post-crash. He values it far more than human life because he sets a sniper on the guy who's trying to kill the whale. Like, he's going to murder a human being. Like, so obviously he's lost it. And he's massively distressed. It's a really interesting...
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, yeah.
Now that we're talking about
it. It's really good.
It is really good.
It's really good.
Really good.
This whole series is really good.
Yeah, I love The Massive.
I'm on a boat.
I'm on a boat.
Yeah, I'm on a boat.
Massive is a fantastic series.
Kiss Me, Satan.
Also fantastic series.
Oh, I will.
Super fun. Victor Gishler and Juan
Ferreira.
I love
this book.
There's, this was better than issue one, and I loved issue one.
Yep. Juan Ferreira's art, again.
Werewolves, vampire maids.
Captures movement and perspective beautifully. There's a sequence involving someone getting their brains blown out, and things closer to you are out of focus and out of perspective. Well, it's beautifully drawn. Really,
did you like the silhouette part when he stakes the vampire? I thought that was wicked.
That was very
cool. So good. I just love this. I
love this book.
I would like to get a page of original art from this book. But
I would be
have a child, so I probably won't have any money. But still, it's beautiful.
You should get the page of them delivering a werewolf baby.
That was good. Okay. I like this one. I've had enough of people wrecking my caddy.
Yeah, that was funny.
And also, of course, like the splash page you're talking about of the bullet to the brain is like
amazing,
fucking gorgeous.
Yeah, it's pretty.
And there's an ear flying off.
Yeah, the ear that's
bang bang. Nick Foley.
Did he get caught in barbed wire?
No, it got blown off with a shotgun or handgun.
How are we doing for time?
Boys, you know what time it is. We're at 80 minutes. We got 10, so we can. So we can.
Sneaking silently through the alley.
Ryan, you should be making noises. You're not helping us out here.
I feel like
man, barely alive. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him.
We can make him better.
I am a robot. Every favorite.
Hey,
remix.
Have you ever heard that DMX song where he said, he goes like this. This is how the first lines go. I got blood on my hands and there's no remorse. I got blood on my dick because I fucked a corpse. That's a real song that DMX wrote.
Ugh.
Isn't that awesome?
I was wondering if it was going to say fucked a horse.
Yeah, that's
awesome. Because it rhymes better than corpse. All right, boys and girls.
And he says he's a nasty N-word. I don't say that.
Right, yeah.
But I just made you all think it.
So okay, favorite comics. So, there were two comics this week that I could have picked. I didn't pick one of them because I knew Rob would, and because it was probably the best comic I read this week, and possibly one of the best comics I've read all year. It's pretty much a staggering work of genius. I'm blown away by it. But I'm going to talk about a different book because it was my favorite. Ed Brubaker, Steve Epting, Velvet... Number one, ladies and gentlemen, she's here tonight.
Hello, I am Velvet.
1970s spy fiction.
I don't know. She said she's from New York.
Hey, listen here, you fuckers.
Hey!
This is by far the nicest looking Steve Epting stuff we've ever seen.
Oh my god, this book looks so beautiful.
The colors are incredible. The character Velvet is really cool. Basically, a secret agent has died. And shit's going crazy at the secret agent farm.
And the crux of both of his two series at Image deal with... a trope character in either spy fiction or crime fiction being brought to the forefront. So this is
secretary.
Miss Moneypenny.
Moneypenny
being more interesting than everyone else.
Totally.
And Fatale, the femme fatale, being more interesting than everyone else. I mean, it's a really cool. I like strong female leads like this. It's different.
It's such a
excellent.
Good setup too.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Super strong first issue. There's tons of action. It's super exciting. The spy intrigue is great. The whole conceit is spectacular. I just was so enjoyed this comic.
This would have been my favorite if one of you had not picked it.
Right. Velvet was,
and also in the back was one of my heroes. Like if I could meet anyone, I would love to meet Jess Nevins and have lunch with him. Because this guy is just like what I wish I was. This pop culture encyclopedia. The guy knows everything, and he wrote this essay in here on the history of spy fiction through the Cold War. And it gave me a list of books that I want to read and made me feel smart for having read some of the ones he talked about. But it's just a really strong first issue.
I love that.
It's so accessible, too. Like, way more accessible than Fatale.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, Fatale is amazing, but it's different. This is a lot more straightforward. It's so well done, but it's a little bit... I think the elevator pitch for this book is probably a little easier to sell someone on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it also reuniting such a great creative team from Cap. And then what they did in Cap, I mean, ultimately recapturing that same action, espionage, but do it again. Yeah, doing it way better here. Like,
There's no superheroes and no, you know, supervillains.
Which kind of ruins it for me.
Cold War spies, it's amazing.
I like superheroes.
I like superheroes. I like superheroes.
Robbie G.
Okay, so my book was... I agree with Joey. I think this is one of the strongest single issues to come out in 2013.
This is some Neil Gaiman shit.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. So this is Pretty Deadly by Kelly Sue DeConnick and Emma Rios with Jordi Belair on colors. It begins with this really beautiful, very fairy tale esque storytelling from Bunny to Butterfly, which is literally just a bunny talking to a butterfly. The bunny gets murdered really, really soon, and then on the back of the cover you see Bone Bunny, and that's basically the narrative. Throughout the issue is Bone Bunny regaling Butterfly with this story about Ginny Deathface, who's the daughter of death, and it has to do with
the sequence where they introduce like the story of Ginny. Oh, it's like the coolest
and thing it ever. it follows fairy tale lullaby sort of creepy story stuff format. I don't know.
When you say creepy stories, all I can think of is it happened to a friend of mine.
But it's a really interesting fable told by really interesting fables as they skip sort of the chronology. It starts with Ginny Deathface, the daughter of death, early on in her infancy for the first two pages, and then they skip ahead to the girl in the vulture cloak, this girl Sissy, who walks around with basically her the old fox.
She's like this blind guy too.
And the sequence where they are where they're telling the story of Ginny Deathface and the story of beauty marrying death,
staggering.
It's really amazing.
As a aside, do you guys have a page that's like kind of fucked up with the colors, like printing wise fucked up like that?
I noticed that. Okay.
I was just wondering.
I do have that.
I'm assuming it's printing because it's like a straight line.
I read this three times and I just noticed it. Yeah, it's a printing error. But anyway,
whatever.
It sets up this series to be a really interesting chase. This series is going to be a very cool chase.
I can't wait to see who these characters are. Like,
I know. It really hooks you with giving you aspects of the daughter of death, giving you aspects of this girl in the vulture cloak, who Fox goes to for help, why Deathface is chasing this little girl through the Wild West. I mean, it's really, really, it's mesmerizing. It's a really outstanding issue.
It's not going to be for everybody, but I think that if you have half a brain in your head, you'd be able to say. Even like Ryan, you said this wasn't really your cup of tea.
No, not at all.
But there's no way you could look at it and be like, "This is a shitty comic."
It's not a shitty. I think it's a masterpiece. Yeah. It's not what I like really.
By the way, Ryan, we got 3 minutes
and we're out of
it's,
here.
It's very, very high. It's high. Say, it's very conceptual.
Is a fucking demon.
Oh, yeah, this, Emery this book is a looks demon.
Beautiful.
And once again, not really like my favorite kind of art style, but this looks awesome. And yeah, it's not
the cover is
you'll see my thing that's my favorite. But
oh my god,
the cover looks
the wraparound cover is awesome. Outstanding. It's it's solid, perfect first issue. I love absolutely it. Perfect,
fantastic. Can't wait, Ryan. And we now got
get into something even heavier.
3 minutes.
Yeah. Oh my god, this is even too heavy and brainy for me.
Yeah. This
I
is
didn't
like,
pick it up because it was intimidating.
It's a very dense read. My favorite this week is Marvel. Now what? The one shot. With a whole bunch of awesome one creators. Shot. Scotty Young makes
that's not
appearance.
The interesting thing about it.
There's a whole bunch of creators. There's Scotty Young does like kind of the bookends, and he also does a cover, which are really funny because it's just a lot of him being like, "Holy fuck, I make so much money off these Marvel babies," and at the end he's like, "I'm gonna make you guys into cats," and then it's just a panel of him sitting with all this like stacks and stacks of monies, and they. And Deadpool saying he's probably miserable drawing all those dumb cats, which I thought was really funny. Anyways, we get a story from Ellie Kalan, who I guess is from what I hear, is a writer on The Daily Show, with Jacob Chabot doing the art. And Jacob Chabot is fucking awesome. And it's a two-page story called Marvel Apocalypse Now, told from it's basically the High Evolutionary telling you what Marvel is going to do next, and it is just two pages of taking big shots at Marvel and being like, this Marvel Now thing is kind of silly, isn't it? They're bringing back, there's a panel about them bringing back all your favorite characters, like Morbius and Sif, and I'm sorry you were, and then it's just Valkyrie. And then at the end he goes, did I mention Wolverine has 3 books? And then they've got like these new characters like Red Cable and Spider Storm and Shang-Chi and Thing Jr. It's really just really taking the piss out of Marvel and the whole Marvel Now thing. After that, I think we get it's 5 or 6 pages of Jerry Duggan and Brian Posehn telling the story of the Puppet Master, which is Dr. Octopus before he became Dr. Octopus and he was Dr. Octopuppet. Drawn by Pat Oliff with like this really cool retro style coloring done by John Callies. It's another really silly story. Throughout this, we get Wyatt Cenac and Ilya Kalan doing these little one page stories about them inserting themselves in the Marvel U and being like, I wonder what happened if this. They're really fun and really expertly drawn. I couldn't tell you. Coover, maybe, is the one who draw it. There's a name. It says Coover. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Wyatt Cenac and Ilya Kalan, comedians, friends, seekers. I love Wyatt Cenac. He's one of my favorite correspondents on The Daily Show.
Can I interject something funny?
Yes.
If you look at the Prince Breakfast Can Wait video on YouTube, the first comment is from Walter Jr. and it says, seriously, what is this bullshit? Because we all know anything about Walter Jr. Breakfast. He loves a good breakfast.
What is this bullshit?
We get the story from Lucas Hazlett and once again Jacob Chabot, who is awesome. And it's a story about Professor X bringing in this team of improvisers, like this duo of improvisers, to teach the X-Men about teamwork. And it's just ridiculous. And by the end, there's like an ambulance and people get killed. And it just so expertly drawn. I don't really know what to say. I'm trying to do this in quickly.
No, I just love, and there's an ambulance and everyone gets killed.
Kind of. There's like a fight and I think the improvisers get killed. But Jacob Chabot, once again, is fucking awesome. Like, he has just this kind of goofy, cartoony style. And he draws, like, Cat Beast and Wolverine with the red and yellow. It's awesome.
Cat Beast is the best.
We get this story called Cap Fished by Sarah Schaefer writes it, and the awesome Steve Lieber draws it. It's basically an episode of Catfish starring Captain America, where he goes to meet this girl that he's met online, and he keeps talking about how it's his soulmate and stuff, and then it turns out to be the Red Skull. It's just like this really silly thing, and Iron Man and Black Widow come and save him from Red Skull's attack with extra hold hairspray that he created with a bit of radioactive material. Another one of these little one-page things is about what if Thor and Storm got married.
Thorm,
if you will. And it actually says on the last page, Happy Holidays from the Thorms. It's just another silly, fun little page. We have Ladies Who Brunch by Sarah Benincasa and John DeVore.
Sarah Benincasa.
It's a really funny story and drawn by Tanya Del Rio. Alberto's sister.
Sarah Benincasa does a bit on an MC Fred-A-Lot album.
Really?
Yeah.
It's basically about She-Hulk, Wasp, and Sue Storm going out for breakfast, and Thor is there as well, and they just kind of talk about how big of a blowhard he is, and then Doom shows up and tries to fight them. The girls take care of him, and then Thor comes out of the bathroom after taking a pee. While they beat up Dr. Doom and then takes all the credit. And I just think the headline's funny because it says, Thor defeats Doom, Miss Quito, the disappearing hottie, and Babe Hulk help. I don't know. We get another thing, one page thing about the Watcher.
The Wyatt Snipe thing, yeah.
Yeah, the Uatu the Watcher and how they're like, he would be insufferable because he's seen everything, so he would never shut up. It's kind of funny. And then, finally, we get what was my favorite little three-page story by Scott Adsit, who was in 30 Rock, and Declan Shelby doing the artwork. Another Uatu the Watcher story, and it's basically him getting shit on by the other Watchers because he doesn't just watch and he always intervenes. So he can't. It's like an episode of Intervention. Yeah. He has to go back and he like meets up with all these villains. He's like, sorry guys, I kind of screwed your pants up. He goes to Galactus and he's like, I just wanted to say I'm sorry. It wasn't me. It was my addiction. And then Galactus just says, I'm proud of you. While he's eating this planet, and it's like, the man from the sky will eat us all. And another one's saying, I never fell in love. Anyways. Yeah, and then at the end he goes, he tells all everybody that, you realize by telling me this and doing this intervention that you guys all intervened as well. And then he gets to cancel them. I don't know. This book was really...
It looks really fun.
It's so much fun and so silly. And that's kind of my bag, is I like a lot of lighter stuff. I do like my heavy books, but...
You like your heavy men. Wrestling.
Heavyweights. Wrestling.
Heavyweights. Okay.
But no, that's... It's just like a silly, fun book with, once again, a lot of shots at Marvel. Like, I feel like DC wouldn't print a book like this that basically makes fun of their business model. Yeah. And it's good to see that Marvel does. And like I said,
business by some really talented
people with some great
art. Oh, I've got... I'll make you an offer. Boys, thank you for joining me. That was
a
fun week. It's time for us to wrap it up.
All right.
Until next week, I'm Joey G.
I am Robbie G.
And I'm the Ramblin' Ryan.
The Ramblin' Ryan.
You don't even need to buy Marvel now, what? Because I just told you everything.
I love
that time I read
you.
The Pizza Dog
issue.
I love you, bye.
I know.